Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This is Blue Moon. It's the original fan-made Manchester City podcast. Coming up, we've got news and views from City's week. It's your club, and this is your show.
What a difference a week makes. This time last week, the podcast was the audio version of the This Is Fine Dog in the Burning Bar meme. But after wins over Arsenal and Aston Villa, everything is running smoothly again. City are back on top of the Premier League table, albeit having played a game more, and it feels like they have the momentum they need for a title run-in once again. Welcome to this week's Blue Moon podcast. On today's show, we'll be looking over the key talking points of the last two matches and focusing on the performances. We've said for a while that we've wanted to see more from Pep Guardiola's side, so have we seen that in the last 7 days? It's Nottingham Forest next, so we'll hear from journalist and Forest fan Nick Miller later on to find out more about their season so far. Plus, Sam Roscoe takes us on a trip down memory lane to City's last visit to the City Ground. Then the Champions League returns, so we'll hear from German journalists Guido Schäfer and Philipp Hinter on what to expect from RB Leipzig when City travel there on Wednesday. It's been a good week, so let's get straight into it. I'm David Mooney, and I'm joined this week by City fan Ali Fogg.
Hi, Dave. Hi, everyone.
And the Daily Mail's Jack Gorn.
Hello, David.
So, yes, two great results, Jack. We'll start with you because when I asked you yesterday ahead of the game if you would happily do the podcast, and you said like it was one of those where it was really going to be on a knife edge whether this was going to be a good show or not. And I didn't realise you were going to get home at 3:30 in the morning. So thank you very much for on a day off as well.
Yeah, so it was on a knife edge whether the show was going to be a good one or not. So you decided to get me on, which is that's on your head.
Yeah. But it is a good show because it was a great performance.
They were really good. Arsenal, I thought it was one of those nights that could prove pivotal at the end of the season, which is quite easy to say, isn't it? But it did have that sort of feeling that they kind of wrestled something away from Arsenal in that second half, and like the air went out of Arsenal's balloon a little bit because the atmosphere was absolutely incredible. It had been built up like a cup final, and you know the whole place was whipped up into such a frenzy about 10-15 minutes before kickoff. It was really quite a hostile atmosphere, which is not something you would ordinarily sort of say about the Emirates.
Did the first half kind of play into that as well, with the manner of City's goal, the fact that they got a penalty, and like just things like that?
Yeah, I think. I think certain things that happened on the night were a product of what was going on in the stands a little bit. I thought both teams played the occasion more than you would expect them to. Or you'd expect Arsenal to, but not City quite so much. And obviously there was the booking for time wasted and things like that, which all sort of, I don't know, it just fed into how the night was going.
Yeah, Ali. As we said there, City back on top of the table on goal difference, played a game more. It is big to go back on top, though, isn't it? Even though they do have that extra game.
Yeah, I'm not overly fussed whether we're one position above or behind on goal difference with a game more to play and that kind of thing. But the fact that we have closed the gap from a couple of weeks ago, it was looking like it could open into double figures. And it's now gone. We're now level pegging. We've got all the momentum. It feels to me like if the Premier League season was a Shakespeare play or whatever, it felt like we've just finished Act Two. And we go into the final stretch now, more or less level pegging, but feeling really good about everything. So, as you said at the beginning, what a difference a week makes. But, considering the spell we've had since the World Cup, which is kind of, if you want to talk about the Act Two, was probably that would have been it. It hasn't been great for us. We haven't been playing particularly well. Obviously, stuff off the pitch has been a massive distraction and has done terrible things to my head, and I presume that applies to most of our listeners as well. But we've finished it, level pegging with Arsenal and going into the final stretch, starting to play well and looking like we know what we're doing again. So, yeah, happy days.
Yeah, comedy or tragedy, though, that's the question.
It's always a bit of both with City. Isn't
it? Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably say the comedy has been on the pitch in the last few weeks because they have been a shambles, really, haven't they?
They have been at times, yeah. Well, let's get into that, though, Jack, because what of the performances against Villa and Arsenal? I mean, Villa's an interesting one because they started really, really well in that and then slowed down. But Guardiola said afterwards he thought the second half they were better. And then Arsenal...
Yeah, really shocked me that he came out and said that.
But then Arsenal, it felt like they started really slowly and sped up as the game went on and just wrestled control of it. So it's a really kind of like two interesting games for kind of the way they've controlled them.
Yeah, I've got to be honest, this week has been a little bit of a blur and I've not watched either of the games back. But yeah, I mean, it's like, that's a classic Pep thing to say on Sunday after the Villa game. It's like, oh, you all think we were really good when we scored three goals in the first half. But actually, we were really good when we looked like we might concede a second. And anyway. yeah, I thought the Arsenal... The Villa one was a little bit... I don't really want to use the word complacency because I wouldn't know whether they were complacent or not in the second half, but it looked like a really good team that had quite a comfortable lead and then just played within themselves for a bit. But obviously Villa are quite good, so took the chance and then, yeah, could have nicked another one as well. Whereas Arsenal, I thought they grew into it. They'd started okay and then sort of seeded a little bit of ground in midfield.
It's kind of after they scored, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then the great thing about Wednesday night was the fact that they sort of corrected the issues. I said to him last night after the match, it's like, do you think that was more down to character or do you think it was, knowing, being able to react to how certain things were going wrong in the game? And he sort of said it was a character thing rather than anything else, which is a positive for them. But I also think the sort of Bernardo situation needed correcting, and I thought they were excellent once they went to a sort of traditional back four. I don't really maybe because I'm thick, but I just don't really understand why they need to place that burden on Bernardo to go and play in two positions at the same time. I just don't get it.
Yeah. Well, let's... Ali, I want to play this. This is Jack Grealish speaking to Amazon after the game. Just have a listen to what he says and then I'll get your thoughts on it after.
If I'm being honest, I don't think we actually played that well. I think Arsenal played a lot better than us. I thought they were the better team.
Really?
I haven't seen... I think so. Did they have more possession and stuff?
Yeah.
They did, yeah.
Yeah? Yeah.
I'm 36% guessing... possession for you guys.
36?
36. Yeah. Lowest under... The manager's passed us, Pep Guardiola, in his time at the club.
I can't know. I don't really want to say much about that. That's what I mean. I thought they were the better team. I don't know what you guys think. I thought, they had a few chances and stuff. But listen, I think if you win titles and stuff, you've got to come to grounds like this. And even when you're not at your best, you've got to win games. And that's what me and Riyad said, to each other on the bench.
It's interesting because I watched the highlights back ahead of recording today. And every single one of the key moments is an Nketiah header early on. Then after that, it's all City key moments.
Were you watching on the Man City YouTube?
I wasn't, no. I watched the Sky Sports.
First thing I think about that interview is it reminds me yet again how great Jack is at doing those kind of interviews. It's so rare to have a footballer who speaks naturally and with personality and as if he is actually thinking about the question he's been asked and giving an honest response. Incredibly rare most footballers. I think City played below what they know their capacity can be. So particularly in the first half, they were a bit nervy. They allowed, maybe gave Arsenal a bit too much respect and allowed them to play and occasionally allowed us, or occasionally pushed us back into our own half, that kind of thing. Second half was a very different game. And I think it's probably fair to say that Arsenal were the better team in the first half, but there wasn't a lot in it. And it was more or less a toe-to-toe kind of 45 minutes. Second half, I thought we absolutely bullied them. And the longer it went on, the better we got. And it really, there's such a cliche to talk about sending a message with a result, but it really did feel like we made a statement with the last 20, 30 minutes of that match. They were remarkable. Particularly, I think it was one of the interviews, it wasn't Jack, it might have been Erling Haaland, I think we'll go on to talk about in a moment. He said that he didn't really know what Pep had done at halftime.
I can play that now because it's we've got it. This was Haaland speaking to Amazon after the game. He just about the tweaks that Guardiola made.
Small adjustments in the halftime from Pep, and in the end we are good quality players and we have to get it out every single player, and this is exactly what we did today.
What were those adjustments by Pep at halftime?
I honestly don't remember. I'm so happy. I don't remember now.
Yeah, no, I thought, Ali, if I'm being honest, I thought he knew exactly what it was and he was just saying, listen, I'm not telling you.
That probably was it. But I mean, it looked really obvious to me that what Pep had said is do not give them an inch in their own half. When they are trying to play out from the back or when they are knocking it about between their defenders, get in their face, get in their faces, get in their shorts, get in their boots, and just hassle them and harry them and hound them down. And that's what we did, and it really worked. And I think for me, it kind of reminded me of something that one of the great qualities of Pep Guardiola teams at their best is they are incredibly hardworking. For all the skill, for all the tactical genius and formations and all the technical stuff we talk about, Pep Guardiola teams at their best work insanely hard. And when you saw Haaland and Kevin De Bruyne and Bernardo and Jack Grealish, Mahrez when he was still on the pitch, absolutely hounding those Arsenal defenders and forcing them into mistakes again and again and again. Even Zinchenko was giving away the ball in his own penalty box because they were absolutely terrorised by what we were doing to them. And that was the huge difference between the first half and the second half. And it was really obvious that that was a Guardiola instruction. They'd just been yelled at and told to get in their faces. And it worked. And I hope we remember that going forward.
Yeah, Jack, you mentioned before about kind of burdening Bernardo with the sort of left-back situation. Villa's first goal came from basically Bernardo having no protection behind him and him giving the ball away. And then City looked a lot more in control of the game against Arsenal when Ake moved to left-back and they had a bit more of a conventional setup. So in terms of kind of going forward, is this something you can see him sticking with?
No, well, I think he said on the telly last night that it was his fault and it's not something he'll do again, I think. Obviously, I didn't watch the telly.
Yeah.
So maybe that's the end of the experiment. Although it's weird because on Sunday, I didn't think he really played sort of left backy on Sunday. Maybe it's because
Villa dropping into centre backy, wasn't it?
Yeah. One of my editors said to me on Sunday night, Monday morning, so we think we should do something on Bernardo playing at left back. Like, surely they can't play him there on Wednesday because Saka will have him on toast. I said to him, I was like, he wasn't really playing at left back against Villa, and I don't think he will on Wednesday.
And then Saka had him on toast.
I ended up looking like pretty silly. But they wanted. It just seems like, I don't want to sound like Fabian Delph, but it just seems like quite basic, doesn't it? It's like, just play a back four. They all know what they're doing. If you want someone to move into midfield, then you can have Walker do it. But then you add Bernardo next to Rodri anyway. And if you play like that, it allows your full backs to go and get forward and go and join in. So you you're overloading in different areas of the pitch. I know he wants to do it in the middle, but don't know. It just seems like they had more balance and looked a bit more cohesive when Ake came on. But I've always thought they look best when they're sort of symmetrical across the pitch. But you know, the results speak for themselves, don't they? Over a number of years, so.
I always thought that, but then I always wonder if it's just that I like symmetrical things. Do you know what I mean? It doesn't look right if it's not symmetrical, and I don't like
yeah,
that.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not quite as sort of OCD as you, am I? So, but yeah, it looks neater, doesn't it?
Yeah, yeah. It's got to look nice. That's the first thing. And then whether it works or not, we sort that problem out afterwards. Ali, the other aspect of this week, solidity has maybe come from the fact that Ruben Dias has been back in the team. They looked really good in the first half against Villa. Dias is there. And then against Arsenal, he made more blocks than both goalkeepers made saves, which just kind of goes to show what he brings to City, I guess.
Yeah, it's huge. It's great to have him back. I think we are still missing John Stones. I think the two of those are such important players for us. And I will be more comfortable when we actually know what our back four is meant to be, our kind of first choice back four, because we're miles away from that. But no, Ruben back, it made an enormous difference, particularly against Villa. You could really see it. There was a challenge he made quite early on, I think maybe against Watkins, where he approached full on and you know took him out, flattened him. It wasn't a foul. It maybe could have been. I had some chat with some friends after about whether he could have had a foul and a yellow for that one. But it just kind of asserted his authority on that back line, and that's what we've been missing. It's the way he you know barks orders at the players around him and just kind of exudes this you know monumental power and authority in everything he does. And there's no doubt one of the reasons we were really struggling through January is that Ruben and John Stones weren't there. But you know, having one or other of them back again is really important. And yeah, fingers crossed we can get all of them up and firing and at full speed before too long.
Yeah. Jack, let's talk about Erling Haaland because 26 Premier League goals now. That's level with the most in a single Premier League season for City. That was Aguero in 2014-15. He's got more goals on his own than Chelsea, Palace, Forest, Wolves, West Ham, Everton, Bournemouth and Southampton. He's now got enough to have won the Golden Boot in 18 of the previous 30 Premier League seasons, so only 12 more to go.
Do you do those maths yourself?
Yeah, I struggle a little bit sometimes when numbers get over 10 because I have to take my shoes and socks off. But you know, as this week basically shown that if like City don't really need to put the ball directly to him, they just need to find the space behind the back line, and he will cause problems. You think of
yeah, but the problem is there's no space normally, is there?
That's, yeah,
I thought he would score more goals in the big games than he has done already this year.
Because there'd be more space.
There is more space, yeah. I thought they went man for man on him last night, didn't they? And if you do that, you get into situations like what happened for the penalty that was overturned because he's just, well, he's brute, isn't he? And will out-muscle and overpower many a defender. Yeah, he's sort of... I thought Arsenal was one of his better performances, even though he only scored once. He scored like tons of hat-tricks already, hasn't he? But just the way he brought others into play, and he seems to be adapting to the needs of teammates a little bit more than he has been.
Yeah.
And it's a two-way thing with Haaland. Yeah, City have to learn to play with him, but he has to also learn what make certain players tick, so you'd make a different run when De Bruyne has the ball to when Gundogan has the ball. You might come shorter if Gundogan has it or Bernardo, whereas De Bruyne you want to be
hanging
on the last you want to hang on the last man, don't you? I think he's sort of developing that, or has done over the last few weeks.
there was a moment, I think it was in the first half, where he could have shot and he seemed to drill it across the face of goal. And I thought that felt a little bit kind of like, oh, Guardiola's kind of, he's starting to mould him a little bit here, because it's the sort of thing where City get.
Yeah, I don't know whether Pep has told him that if you on the edge of the 6-yard box to square it to nobody. I don't think that's an instruction.
That's not what I meant, but it's like there should have been somebody flying in and there wasn't. It's like I accept that that's been a City thing for the last 3 years or so, but you know, it's one of those where I think Grealish said it in his interview with Amazon, where because when he scored, Gundogan obviously played the ball across to him. And I think he said, if that was Erling, then I was never getting that. It's the understanding about when to play it, when to shoot sort of thing. Because it'd be very easy, if you've got Haaland's talent, it'd be very easy to go, right, I'm in the box, I'm hitting this.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that was quite a good example of that was Grealish's goal at Arsenal. Where Haaland's on the edge of the box. I looked at him and went, go on then, shoot. And he's not. He's squared it to Gundogan, and then it's been squared again to Grealish. It ends up in a net because they've manufactured a better position to score from. And then there was one at Spurs the other week. I think it was quite late on in the game where he had like 2 yards of space, about 20 yards out. I was like, go on, hit it. And he's passed it. And I go, no, why have you not had a shot there? But that's because the way they play and how they maneuver teams about. So on that Spurs one, I think he passed it to Grealish on the left-hand side or someone out there. It's just sort of becoming ingrained in his brain. But that example from Spurs, you don't want him to lose that sort of instinct to just go and have a shot. Because Haaland's that good that he'd batter that in from 20 yards.
Yeah.
Sometimes you don't need to find that last pass. Yeah. But it's just striking a balance, I think.
Yeah, the number of times, Ali, where I thought Arsenal were at sixes and sevens just because Haaland was there. Like he wasn't even in possession. He was just like he was just in the vicinity of the defenders, and suddenly it's like chaos was. Chaos didn't happen, but you felt like it was almost on the verge of happening. If that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, occasionally it did. It's almost impossible, I think, to defend against Haaland when you're shoulder to shoulder and a long ball comes in. If you're Saliba or whoever's marking him, how do you possibly compete with that size and physique and the height he can jump? All you can do is kind of hope that whatever he knocks down like goes the wrong way, or that you get to the ball after, because he's going to win again and again. And I think that one of the things that was most disappointing about the Tottenham performance a few weeks ago, seems a long time ago now, is that we weren't doing that. And I think if we had done that a bit more, just, you know, like hoofed, particularly, you know, Ederson can do it all day, but, you know, hoofed some long balls over their midfield and hope that Haaland knocks it down or picks it up or turns in it or all the different combination of things he can do. Because it's a phenomenal weapon that we've got there. And, you know, obviously there's a lot more to Haaland's game than that, but it is, it's such a direct way into any defence. I don't know, maybe if a peak Virgil van Dijk was up against him shoulder to shoulder, he might have a chance. But there are very, very, very few centre halves in world football that can possibly cope with Haaland when you're dropping the ball in his head over 40 yards. And especially when we've got players, not just Ederson, but, you know, our own centre backs, who can play dangerous long balls and put it on his head and, you know, deliver it in a sixpence. One of the reasons we have played so well against Villa and Arsenal last night is precisely because we were prepared to take the chance on, you know, losing control and losing the ball in order to get the benefits of, you know, one time in three, one time in four, Haaland will win and he'll come out on top.
Yeah,
we could have had more.
Guardiola said in the post match afterwards that the first half they would just play, they were just hoofing it. In the second half, they were actually considering where they were playing the high balls too. And it is a subtle difference that there is a difference between a hoof ball forward for somebody to chase and a long ball to a target man.
Yeah, But it's easy to mix the two up.
Yeah.
It's easy for one to look like the other when it goes well or goes badly.
Yeah, I would argue that Edison's ball over for Grealish to chase for the opening goal was a bit more of a hoof than a considered high ball. But, you know, here we are.
To be fair, I don't think Edison ever actually just hoofs it. He's always got a target in mind. And it's usually Haaland, but often it's the winger, it's Mahrez or Grealish. And, you know, sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But he's given, as we say in my part of the world, he's given it a proper welly. Yeah.
Let's chat about the sponsor of this week's show, NordVPN. Have either of you ever used a VPN before? Jack, you've been on plenty of European away games. You must have needed to use a VPN in the past.
Yes, because I'm so technologically savvy. I have used a VPN before.
Good.
Very helpful.
Yeah, pre-season tours and stuff like that as well, I guess. When you head over to places like China, you've got to check your emails and stuff like that.
Yeah, use them in China to get to emails and Google and things like that. So, it's quite valuable.
Yeah, very handy. Well, nobody likes to be watched or tracked, even if you've got nothing to hide. That's why it's important to step up your privacy game. When you're browsing through a VPN, your traffic is encrypted, so nobody can see what you do online. You can listen to the Blue Moon podcast without anyone finding out that that's exactly what you're doing, so no need to have shame there. That makes VPNs perfect if you use public Wi-Fi a lot. Jack, does that apply to you as well? Because you must work all over the place.
Yeah, it's just an extra level of security in it.
Yeah.
Which is quite handy, particularly, you know, my industry, people would like to see what you're doing. So.
Yeah, quite. Well, a VPN, it secures your connection so you can browse privately as well. Hackers trying to steal your data on public hotspots can't see your traffic. The same goes for government agencies, marketers, your internet service provider. They can't collect your browsing history and messages when you're using a VPN. You can also use a VPN to access content from home while you're abroad, as we talked about before. It means if websites are blocked in the country that you're in, you can still access them with NordVPN. Get NordVPN, download the app and connect to a VPN server to forget about internet restrictions. So if you'd like to try NordVPN and do it while helping out the Blue Moon podcast as well, simply go to nordvpn.com/Blue Moon. Grab your exclusive NordVPN deal by going to nordvpn.com/Blue Moon to get a huge discount off your NordVPN plan and a bonus gift as well. It's completely risk-free with Nord's 30-day money-back guarantee. So head on over right now to nordvpn.com/Blue Moon.
You can listen to the show ad-free by joining our Patreon, patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Ali, is there a conversation to be had about Edison while we're talking about him? Because just looking at this week, possibly should do better, could do better with the Villa goal. Then the Arsenal penalty comes along and it's one of those that maybe isn't given most weeks, but it is there and it's clumsy and, you know, it doesn't look great. And then I'm wondering, at what point does his quality on the ball and his footwork stop outweighing the fact that sometimes he doesn't make saves when he should do?
I think we've just about got to the point where it's reasonable for us to have that conversation. He's not been great this season by his own standards. And it's not just his, you know, shot stopping and his work with his hands has been slightly below where you might like it to be. I'm not actually sure his delivery and his playing out, you know, from his feet has been quite up to the level that it's been in previous years. But it's not quite dropped far enough that you would even consider dropping him, however good Stefan Ortega is coming through and looking. I think Edison is Edison. He will always, you know, throw himself about like a galumphing elephant at times. He will always he will take risks, and occasionally he'll come a cropper. He's not the best shot-stopping goalkeeper the world has ever seen, but he is what he is, and he brings so many qualities. And I'm not worried about him yet. I would like him to produce a few more top-class saves. I will say that the Villa goal, I didn't really blame him so much. I thought maybe he could have stopped it, but that was just everyone had lost concentration for a moment.
Yeah.
the ball out from Laporte to Bernardo was 5 yards short. Bernardo picked it up and could have got away, but turned the wrong way into, again, was it Watkins again? And lost the ball when he probably shouldn't. Akanji was all over the place and should have stopped it there. And then the shot came in really quickly, and Ederson maybe could have got there. And it just looked like everybody had fallen asleep a little bit. And I'm not particularly blaming. At the time, Ederson was about fourth on my list of people to blame for that goal. When I've looked at it since, like, okay, yeah.
He's moving up a bit.
The Villa goal sort of kind of sums Ederson up a little bit for me, really, is that you wouldn't necessarily expect him to stop it, but I don't think anyone ever thought he was going to.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It'd be really helpful for City if he actually bailed them out in a game once in a while. Like, you see it with all the top teams. Look at De Gea at United. Like, the amount of times that he's bailed them out and won them points or made sure they've gone through in a cup competition. It just be having someone reliable with the hands behind allows them to have an off night, whereas I don't think City can have an off night. And I'm thinking about the sort of Champions League with this, where if they go, argument sake, they go and play PSG or Bayern Munich in a quarter final or a semi final, and they're not playing well away from home, and they're under the cosh a little bit, they need the goalkeeper to make five or six saves. I just don't. I can't see him producing that sort of performance.
I think, was it against, was it Chelsea in the Carabao Cup when Stefan Ortega came in, like way back in about August, and produced four or five world-class saves in the space of 90 minutes? And I remember saying to friends after, I think it was the best goalkeeping performance we'd seen at Manchester City since the glory days of Joe Hart. And I think that was quite striking because, Ederson, for all his qualities and for his, you know, personality and the presence that he brings and all the rest of it, you know, he's a massive player for us. But just as a goalkeeper, you know, it's a long time since we've had, you know, a goalkeeper being anywhere close to man of the match and keeping another team out. And, you know, it's a bit unfortunate that we went out the Carabao Cup a little bit early and that we haven't had more kind of straightforward cup fixtures this season, because I think Ortega, he's good enough that he could potentially put pressure on Ederson. And I think all it would take is for Ederson to do a hamstring or something and be out for a couple of months. And you could almost believe Ortega would come in and put in the kind of performances that would really put him under pressure. And maybe that's what he needs.
Yeah. Yeah. Just finally then, Jack, let's finish the first part of the show on, they always say save the best till last, so Rodri. A bit of a dodgy game against Spurs, but then, I mean, two player of the match performances this week for me.
Yeah, well, he looked shattered against Spurs. But there's not a great deal to say about Rodri. He's the best City midfielder in the division. That's just is, isn't he? It's just a fact. And yeah, he was supremely good against Arsenal.
The number of times against Arsenal where, because I wasn't there, I watched it on the telly, the number of times where suddenly he was in camera shot again and you think, the camera's just panned from somewhere else. How have you got there?
Yeah. He's not the quickest, is he, as well? It's just, he just can read the game brilliantly. And he's, you know, again, like, you wouldn't say this about a City team 5 years ago, would you? But he's another one who's powerful and wins his battles, and which is sort of a kind of Yadar thing to say, isn't it, these days? But like, it's true. Like, he just puts himself about, muscles people off the ball, eases attackers out of the way, and has incredible vision as well. So, absolutely no surprise that he's reacted to that Spurs game by what he's done over the last few days.
Yeah. Ali, I guess we've talked about City refinding their feet this season. I guess Rodri refinding his feet is a big part of that.
Hugely. And there's another thing I've noticed about him. He seems to have picked up a bit of an edge over the last few weeks. Have you noticed this? He's been... that business with wanting the penalty was downright bizarre the other day.
I missed this. What happened there?
We're still not quite sure. Like, I think maybe that Haaland had already had a knock in his thigh and was a little bit worried about whether or not he could put everything into taking a penalty. And then there was a, like, Mahrez would have stepped up to it, and Rodri was like, nope, I want it. And Gundogan had to step in and sort it all out.
I missed this entirely. And the only penalty I've ever seen Rodri take was horrendous. So why would he want to do that?
But yeah, no, he had a bit of a moment. He was like, no, I'm doing this. And Gundogan had to kind of put him back in his place. But there have been various times he's kind of like, he's gone, you know, charging into confrontations. And he's developed a bit of a Fernandinho to him. And obviously it's helping his game as well. He really looks fired up at the moment. His performance has been all the better for it. But no, I've always been a Rodri fan, even when people had their doubts. I once called him the impenetrable wall of Spaniard. It's like, it must be a nightmare trying to get past him if you're an opposing midfielder, because he's not the quickest, but he takes up a lot of space.
Yeah, it's his arse. He uses his arse really well.
Yeah, that's it. Yeah. It's absolutely one of the reasons why we're, you know, back approaching something our best form is because Rodri is back on his best form, and he is one of those players. When he plays well, we usually win. And if he plays badly, we're not the same team.
Yeah. Now, it's time to look ahead to the game with Nottingham Forest. Let's start by introducing the journalist with The Athletic and Forest fan, Nick Miller. Hi, Nick.
Hello. How are you doing?
Not too bad, thank you. Not too bad. We're going to get into this game shortly. But first, it's been more than 20 years since City last travelled to play against Nottingham Forest. And Saturday will be the first top-flight meeting between the teams at the City Ground since 1995. The last visit, though, came during City's promotion season in 2001-2002. But it came at a time when they weren't in great form. We all remember Kevin Keegan's side ripping up what's now the Championship. But in the October of that campaign, things were a lot more uncertain. Sam Roscoe picks up the story.
It was a Sunday evening in October 2001, and City were at Nottingham Forest. It was live on ITV Digital, and City's manager Kevin Keegan spoke to them before kick-off.
Two footballing sides, and in this division, you've got to be able to play against everything. I mean, we've played physical sides, and you know who they are, and you know what they do, and it's still very hard to play against. And we've played footballing sides, and Preston would be a footballing side, certainly Crewe. And there's many others, obviously. Notts Forest are a young side that love to knock the ball around. So, two footballing sides. We should get a good game of football, at least.
Going into the game, City weren't in great form. They had one win in their last five and had only taken maximum points from seven of their first 14 matches. They were seen as Division 1's entertainers, though. Despite only being ninth in the table, they were already the leading scorers. But they also had the worst defence of the entire top half. That's possibly why this game was also shown in the cinema. The podcast's David Mooney was there to watch it.
It was at the Odeon on Oxford Road, it's not there anymore. I think it's a restaurant now. We turned up, we kind of got ushered into our seats. We had to buy tickets in the run-up to it. I remember Moonchester wandering up and down the aisles with a box of popcorn. It was on ITV Digital, so that was a subscription service that launched that season, and it had Football League highlights and it had Football League live games as well. So you couldn't watch it just on the normal telly; you had to have a subscription to it. So maybe City had hired out the cinema and were putting a screening on or something.
The game wasn't a blockbuster, though. It would finish 1-1, and we'll come to how that happened shortly. But first, it was a big night for a veteran City defender. Stuart Pearce had signed that summer, and he was a former Forest captain and a club legend at the City Ground.
He's been tremendous for us, but you know, he gave them 12 years of his life when he, you know, he was just a fantastic servant for this club, and the welcome he got when he came off the bus would say it all for him, really. I mean, he knows he's appreciated here, and the Manchester City fans love him. I mean, he'll only be here for a year, but he's been wonderful so far, both on and off the field.
For Pearce and City, though, the game didn't get off to a great start.
Off goes Brennan. Williams, oh, perfect pass. And in towards Johnson. Bart Williams! Nottingham Forest take the lead.
strike by Fuss. There it is, that threat down the left-hand side. Brennan certainly outstripping Benabia. I think Weaver did Forrest a favour, really, by knocking the ball back into Bart Williams' path.
Just 7 minutes in, City's leaky defence had let in another. But the travelling fans didn't have to wait long for the equaliser. Less than a minute later, Sean Gota scored in bizarre circumstances.
Somewhat against the run of play, David, you have to say. Forrest are ahead.
Well, certainly Forrest of City of Penn Forest back slightly, but when they go forward,
oh, it's a horrible error here, and Gota's in, and it's 1-1. Ward cannot believe it. Gota, as always, the quickest to react. Forrest lead a matter of seconds.
That was Forrest goalkeeper Darren Ward rolling the ball to one of his defenders, but Ricky Schumacher had jogged away. In the mix-up, Gota picked up possession, stepped around the stranded keeper and passed it into the empty net. Here's the Gota's memory of the goal told to the end of the year review DVD.
I just thought it was strange what the keeper done. But in terms of the importance of it, in that game they were on top of us and they were very much passing the ball as we like to do. But I just remember it because it was such a bizarre goal. I don't think, you know, you could watch football for years and years and, you know, it'd be a long time before you see another girl like that.
Meanwhile, Mooney explains how the reaction in the cinema was strange.
I just remember it being a really, really weird experience. And I guess it probably wasn't helped as well by the fact that when City scored their equaliser, whoever was filming it, the cameraman, the director, they missed it. I think they were still showing a replay of something else because the goal was so unexpected. The director had cut away to a close-up of somebody else and suddenly the ball's in Nottingham Forest's net and like the away end's cheering in the City ground, but in the Odeon everyone was just a bit, what's happened, we've scored, sort of thing. So it's really just a really odd and surreal experience.
Despite the reputation City were getting for being involved in high scoring games, it would go on to finish 1-1 with both goals coming inside the opening 10 minutes. Afterwards, it was put to Keegan that he must have been happy with the result, but he was having none of it.
Well, you'd be wrong. I'm not pleased with it. Obviously, I just said to the lads, a point away from home is a good result, but I think we can play better. I know we can play better. We've got two or three players missing, but, you know, that's not an excuse. I was a bit disappointed where we played, to be honest with you. Forest are a good young side. They pass it a lot, especially from the back. So you've got to give them a bit of credit. But I was disappointed. You know, I mean, we've got a goal out of nothing because of a mix-up. We possibly deserved a point here tonight, but I don't think we did enough to win it. And that's what I told them.
The manager was clearly worried by City's inconsistent performances. We now know that he'd go on to fix the problems and City would storm the division. But that October, he didn't seem so sure. ITV's interviewer Simon Hill suggested injuries forcing him to rotate the team hadn't helped either.
I think that and a little bit of, you know, confidence still spilling over in some of the players from last season. Plenty of effort, plenty of good intentions, but it wasn't a great performance, but, you know, a point away from home, if you win your own games, will get you out of any league. But you know, if we'd played a bit better, we might have stolen three here tonight.
Kevin, unusual to see you looking so downcast, but thanks for talking to us anyway.
I'm not downcast. I'm just being realistic.
Stuart Pearce also gave his reaction to ITV. He wasn't as upset with the point as his manager was.
I think it was a fairly open game of football. Both teams want to play football. As I say, apart from sort of the first half skirmishes, there weren't too many clear-cut chances after that, but from my point of view, it was a pleasure to come back and play in front of these supporters. We've had reports on Forest, and to be fair, if you eradicate probably the first two or three weeks of the season, they're one of the strongest teams in this league, make no mistake about that. They probably play more football than any team in the league for a start. And as I say, they're picking results up as they go, and they're going to be a very difficult side to beat, especially at home.
Pearce was then asked what it was like to return to the City ground.
It was a bit emotional for you at the start, wasn't it? Was there a lump in your throat when you ran out?
I'm afraid I'm too cold-hearted for that. I was only interested in a result for us, to be honest with you.
You do surprise me.
Yeah, it's just quite strange, isn't it? But no, it was an honour to play for this club. There's always got a big part in my heart, to be honest with you. I work for Manchester City now. I want to see us be successful, but I've got a lot of good friends here.
City were successful that season, finishing the campaign as Division 1 champions. They were promoted back to the Premier League at the first attempt with 99 points and 108 goals across their 46 games. Nottingham Forest, meanwhile, would go on to have a less successful year. After the draw with City that October, they would win only 6 more times, leaving them 16th in the final standings, 6 places and 5 points above the relegation zone.
Hi, I'm Paul Walsh and you're listening to the Blue Moon podcast.
You see stats pop up all the time about clubs and players, and you want to know that exact thing about City. There's an answer. Statcity.co.uk. Want to find out all of the players who played alongside club legends like David Silva, Sergio Aguero or Vincent Kompany? Or maybe you'd like to know which team found it hardest to score past Joe Hart. You can find out City's record in every competition, at every stadium, and under every manager. Just go to statcity.co.uk and browse away. That's statcity.co.uk.
The Blue Moon Podcast. If City won't let you down on the pitch, let us let you down off it instead.
That was Sam Roscoe looking at the Forest game last time City travelled to Forest. Nick, I'll start with you because what do you remember of that game and that season?
It's kind of a slightly weird period in Forest's history. David Platt had just left bafflingly to become England and 21 manager. I say bafflingly because he was. Not a popular manager at Forest. His tenure, I think, summed up by the time, I think it was at Sheffield United, where he was still player manager at that time. He subbed himself on and got sent off about 10 minutes later. it was a sort of... But it was a weird one because at the time it was a fairly grim 2 years of drudgery. But then it seemed that he had actually been doing quite a lot of decent work behind the scenes. And then the start of this season, when Paul Hart had taken over, was when quite a lot of the young players were starting to come through into the first team. I particularly remember around this time Jermaine Genus coming through. And it seems a bit weird knowing the career, Genus sort of went on to become. But at the time, it was like this kind of... He was one of those kids that came through and everyone just went, well, he's not going to be with us for very long. Because he looked like Guardiola in midfield, admittedly surrounded by quite a lot of fairly hapless individuals. As the goal in that game, the last game between us at the City Ground showed, that was a sort of classic sort of slapstick moment for Forest around that time. Yeah. It was quite an odd period where Forest had obviously been relegated from the Premier League in 1999, and for a couple of years, it was like, well, you know, we'll be back in the top flights pretty soon. And I think it was probably around this time that Forest were thinking, maybe we won't be.
Yeah, just in terms of players as well, because obviously it was a big emotional night for Stuart Pearce. What is Pearce to Forest fans? Because like Sam said, like club, it described him as club legend in that feature there, but I don't know if that goes far enough, does it?
Not really. I mean, certainly for people of my generation who were just a little bit too young for the proper glory years under Clough, Pearce was the guy. He was the favourite. If you speak to fans that are around my age, kind of late 30s, 40s, he would have been their favourite player as a kid. As the tackle he put in on, I forget who it was, like very early on in this game, he absolutely plowed through the back of someone, which was, you know, probably would have been red card these days, but back then was...
Play on.
just play on. Just give it a rub and you'll be fine, mate. He was this kind of really thrilling, visceral player who... And also he obviously has a reputation as being a hard man / lunatic, but he was a really good footballer as well. And for a left back to be that kind of really exciting, really quite attacking player to watch. By the time he got to City, he was a little less mobile. But in his pomp, he was one of the most exciting players I've seen play for Forest.
Yeah. On a weird way, Ali, that doesn't ring true for anything what City fans would say about Stuart Pearce, given the given the managerial reign that he had at Eastlands.
Oh, it wasn't pretty, was it? I feel a little bit conflicted about Pearce because I always really liked him as a bloke. He's such a likeable, admirable, heroic figure. I'm not even English, if you probably work out. But just, his career was stellar in so many ways. And then he had that managerial spell at City, which is honestly the bleakest period. One thing I'm quite proud about as a City fan is that we don't easily go down on our managers. We don't demand someone gets sacked when we have a few bad results. But it did get really grim under Stuart Pearce in those years, didn't it? Thankfully, with the passage of time, I kind of feel like a warm glow has settled over again. I don't think there's any outstanding hostility. I don't pick that up from City fans. But it wasn't exactly what you call a match made in heaven. And I'm really glad that Forest fans have got their memories of him because, he deserves those.
Yeah. Nick, let's bring it to this season then. How are things going at the moment for Forest?
All right, I think. There's a bit of a set. Like, everyone I speak to who's not a Forest fan seems to, when I say, still a bit worried about potential relegation, everyone seems to say, no, you'll be fine. Don't worry about it. Which might well be true, given that there are probably three teams in more of a mess than Forest at the moment. But first time we scored goals, and as you may have seen last weekend, two sort of probably first choice centre backs both got injured, the same injury within about 10 seconds of each other in separate incidents, which I've never really seen before, and it's just a bit weird. So we have two centre back, obviously having signed all the players in Europe over two transfer windows.
It has been a mad trolley dash, hasn't it? It's like you've been on supermarket sweep or something for football.
Yeah, it's a bit difficult to work out what's more boring: the kind of jokes about the size of the dressing room, or Forest fans responding saying, "Well, actually, we had to buy all these players because blah blah blah."
they've effectively relegated my club by signing Josh Bowler, him not playing, and then we missed out on him for 6 months.
Yeah, sorry about that.
sorry, I'd add a little bit of gloom to proceedings.
Generally speaking, the atmosphere is just one of huge optimism and like rebirth, I suppose. Obviously, the novelty of being back in the Premier League after 23 years hasn't really worn off yet. Steve Cooper is, an absolute hero, and I don't think you find many fans who would argue he's probably like the second greatest manager in the club's, or second biggest manager or hero in the club's history now, after obviously Brian Clough. But there are, Forest are never too far away from a calamity, and the two centre-back injuries in the same minute last weekend was a sort of, oh yeah, that's Forest. That's what Forest are like.
Yeah. A gentle reminder of what can happen. Yeah,
a gentle reminder. I do worry about these the kind of two, what effectively are second choice centre backs playing against Erling Haaland at the weekend. But it would be churlish of me to be too downhearted about Forest at the moment. But I am. I don't think we're quite as secure as a lot of people seem to think we are.
Yeah. Jack, we I'm very sorry. My cat is now scratching the microphone. Come on. Off. Come on. There we go.
She's annoyed about Forrest's transfer business with Josh Bowler.
Yeah, I thought that might be it. Jack, I've been saying through the last kind of 6-8 weeks or so that City haven't really looked like a side that will put one of those runs together where they'll win kind of 10, 11, 12 games on the bounce.
Yeah, because you're an eternal pessimist.
Yeah, that is true. But I was also working on the evidence of the season so far. And I'm wondering if this is the week where the evidence of the season suggests that, you know, maybe that could change now.
Are you wondering that? Are you saying that?
I'm asking you to tell me that that is the case so that I change my mind.
Right, okay. I don't think that's the case, personally. yeah, I think it's too early to tell. But as we said before, the character they showed at the Emirates was something possibly that a few of us didn't think they had in them at the moment. So that's a really positive sign. And the other thing is what Guardiola's been saying over the last few days about them returning to their sort of principles in training and how everyone's more focused and how the players are actually listening to him when they're having meetings and he's talking to them and things like that suggests that they have turned a corner. And if they've turned a corner, then yeah, they could go on one of those runs. Cause you can never say they won't, because the quality of the players they've got and the experience they've got in these sort of title races is massive. I mean, the interesting thing about the change in attitude in training is he said to us on, I can't remember whether it was this week or last Friday, or maybe it was Sunday, I can't remember. No, it was Sunday actually. He said the last 7 or 10 days, it's been absolutely, like, training's been amazing, all completely changed. And I'd totted up the days and he said, yeah, the last 7 to 10 days have been great. João Cancelo had left 12 days earlier.
Yeah, funny that. Ali, in terms of selection for Forest, we didn't really talk about Jack Grealish in the first part of the show, but he's having a good few. He's in a good moment right now, as Guardiola might say. He's really grown into the team. He's an important player for City's title hopes this season now, isn't he?
Huge. He's been the kind of shining light, the occasionally the saving grace of our season all year, pretty much. And I'm really happy for him because he's had so much stick, and a lot of it I feel has been undeserved. And he now looks as if he knows exactly what his job is, and he's doing it really well. Whereas for his first season and a bit, maybe, he looked like he knew what his job was meant to be, but he didn't really have the confidence, or he always erred on the side of caution so as not to make a mistake. And he's got a spring in his step. He's obviously enjoying his game, and everybody's enjoying seeing him. So, yeah, it's...
First name on the team sheet at the moment?
Pretty much, I think. Yeah, I mean, we have a lot of first names in the team.
Yeah,
that's one of those. He's
for a big game. He was benched for Forest on Saturday.
I know. Yeah, absolutely. I think we're now at the stage of the season where we're going to be playing two games a week for pretty much without exception between now and June. So we will have everybody will be getting weeks on the bench. I think actually we'll probably see a lot of changes on Saturday, and I wouldn't be overly surprised if Nick doesn't have to worry about his two centre-backs having to face Haaland, because I think they might well be facing Alvarez instead.
That's fine then. Yeah, there's not much to worry.
And I was going to say, I'm not sure how much good news that is.
3 points are in the bag. Lovely.
I think we will be seeing, you know, like we have to see rotation, because, you know, no one can play two games a week for whatever it is, 14 weeks or whatever still to go. I think Jack probably will play on Saturday, and certainly whenever we've got our biggest matches and when, you know, when there's a full first choice team, he will always be on it. I think the one thing I'd really like to see is the Grealish on the left and Foden on the right combination with Haaland between them that we saw at the start of the season only once or twice, and it looked really fine. It looked really good, and then we never saw it again. That's something I'm looking forward to for the rest of the season.
That's happening four that's happened in four games, those three playing together from the start. Yeah. They scored 15 goals in those four games.
Wow. Yeah, well, there. That suggests that it's not just my eyes playing tricks on me, that there is something going on there. I mean, it did coincide. Those games coincided with when we were playing really well and blowing teams away at the start of the season. And whether it's cause or effect, I'm not entirely sure. I think one thing we will see against Forest, obviously we wouldn't, Pep Guardiola would never disrespect any Premier League team, but I think he will use it as an opportunity to get some players that have dropped to the fringes over recent weeks back in the starting lineup. So I think I wouldn't be at all surprised to see Phil Foden start, wouldn't be surprised to see Laporte start, wouldn't be surprised to see Alvarez, as I say. So, you know, we might well have three or four changes, but remember, I think one of the best performances we've seen in this calendar year so far was in the cup game against Chelsea, when he played pretty much our second string team, and we absolutely blew them away and were fabulous. So it's not necessarily good news for Nick, but I think we will see changes.
Yeah, Nick, how about for Forest at the moment? Who are the players that are in form? Who could cause City problems?
Well, I mean, you were talking about Grealish and Foden being on the flanks. Weirdly, it's not that they don't worry me, but probably two of our better players this season have been the fullbacks, Renan Lodi, implausibly on loan from Atletico Madrid, and even more implausibly, Serge Aurier, who's been really good, which is, you know, he was one of the kind of sort of afterthought signings. Forest have done this thing where they've been in both transfer windows, have been so committed to signing players that they've signed a couple of players after the transfer window is finished. So Aurier being one of them in sort of early September, and no, I don't think anybody really thought that it was worthwhile. He's not got a great reputation, but he's been great so far. Occasionally being cut out of position, and he's an absolute world-class make a mistake and then make it very clear to everyone else who should have been covering it. But yeah, those two have been pretty good. We might have Ryan Yates back, who's been out for a few weeks with a kind of virus that they weren't entirely clear on what it was, but they seem to have got the bottom of it now, and he may well be available. I think he'll be incredibly important if Forest have any chance of disrupting things in midfield. And the other one is Morgan Gibbs-White, who is, you know, costs a lot of money, but whatever Forest end up paying for him, he's going to be a bargain, because Forest struggle to sort of create chances a little bit, but he's the most creative player in the team, and he does at least one thing every game, which makes me inspires a very sort of curious noise of pleasure, which, you know, it is, it's not all you want. It could do with a few more goals from him, but he's the sort of creative hub. Everything kind of tends to go through him. You know, him against Rodri, if assuming Rodri plays and it's not, you know, Calvin Phillips or someone, that would be a pretty interesting one, I think.
Yeah. Jack, I want to bring this question in from Parky on Twitter, who says, what's going on with Phil Foden? He was superb before the World Cup, and while I know he's been injured recently, feels like we just haven't seen anything like what we could have done from him. Is it all down to Grealish playing well, or do you think something has happened behind the scenes? He was ill for the Spurs game, but it does feel like we've barely seen anything of him. Is this
pass of a question, this, isn't it?
Well, I'm just wondering, is this, as Ali says, is this the time where we can start to see him a bit more into the team now?
Yeah, over the years under Pep, there have been instances of really good players dropping out of the team for weeks and sometimes months, and you go, God, where have they gone? What's happened to him? And there might have been something happened behind the scenes that never came out, and then they come back in and they're brilliant, and you forget all about the previous two or three months or whatever. Hopefully, that'll be the same. Same for Foden. He did. Guardiola did predict a couple of years ago that he would have a dip, because he scaled such amazing heights.
It had to plateau at some point, didn't it?
Yeah, there was always going to be sort of a drop off, which Guardiola was saying was, I mean, Guardiola was saying this before the Champions League final when Foden was, you know, absolutely incredible week in, week out, and said, you know, this will happen, and it has happened. I did a piece on him last week, sort of wanted to bill it as like the curious case of Phil Foden, what's going on sort of thing. And, you know, there have been a number of episodes over the last couple of years with Foden off the pitch that, you know, don't help him. And there's been, you know, there's been some people that are not 100% convinced on some of his lifestyle choices and things like that. So I think it all just, when you put all those things into a pot.
Is it very easy to kind of get 2 + 2 = 5 out of that though for the last few weeks?
It can do. Yeah, it can be. It might be that he's got a bit of a hangover from the World Cup. The World Cup, probably about par for him. He did well, but in fits and starts, but didn't really sort of, I don't think he really made the shirt his own and drove England on in a way that someone who is as good as him should. I also think he's been hampered by playing left wing. And, you know, you can't forget that he did a tremendous job for the team last year by playing as a false nine, which is not, you know, doesn't play to his strengths at all. And actually, Ali was mentioning the Chelsea game the other week when in the Cup, played in the middle, in behind a striker that day, and was absolutely fantastic. And you just sort of look at it and go, if De Bruyne wasn't there, does Foden just play there every week and run games? And we wouldn't, you know, we wouldn't be having these conversations. I don't know. But it's an interesting situation at the moment, because City are better when Foden plays. They always have been. So they've got to find a way to get him fit and firing and happy, which means that he's got to dislodge one of Grealish or Mahrez. And Mahrez is sort of the go-to guy at the moment for Guardiola. He's got a little bit of a battle on his hands, I think.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.
Get a dollop of City nostalgia every Monday. Sign up at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast.
Nick, in terms of Forest's weaknesses at the moment, I mean, obviously you mentioned the centre-backs and the injuries. Where do you think, where else are you most worried about on the team? If that wasn't the case, what would you be most worried about from Forest's recent performances?
Possibly, well, it sort of depends who is picked in midfield. The couple of players, Oro Mangala and Remo Freuler, who were both pretty decent but can't really play together in as much as they're both allergic to passing the ball forwards, which is a bit of a problem. So again, as I kind of mentioned earlier on, scoring goals is a bit of an issue. And Forest signed Chris Wood in January, who... so far, I was just trying to thinking whether I should put this diplomatically or not.
No, he's not.
Okay, he's been awful. He hasn't been doing any of the things that he's supposed to be doing. He hasn't really been winning headers, which is like, you know, come on, Jesus Christ, Chris, just give us something here. I'll take not you know, ripping up defences and scoring loads of goals. But if Chris Wood isn't winning headers, then you've got some problems. It's a bit of a shame because the injury list is pretty long at the moment. There is obviously the centre-backs thing, but Tyro Wanyi, who started off a bit ropily and then sort of partly just before the World Cup break and then in the few games after that, was really starting to look good. If anyone watched the Forest-Chelsea game, which was around the turn of the year, I think, it was 1-1, but a one you really gave Thiago Silva a hard time. And he got injured a few weeks ago, which was a real pity. Scoring goals is a bit of an issue. If Brennan Johnson doesn't have a decent game, and, you know, he's threatening, but he's possibly still not quite like Premier League quality in terms of sort of touch and finishing and technical ability. If he doesn't score goals, then we're in a bit of trouble. Or, you know, if we don't score goals from set pieces. It's just when I think about it, when you've asked me about weaknesses, I've cited the defence, the midfield, and scoring goals. So I'm giving the impression of that everything is terrible and it's all bad, which it isn't. But, you know, there are a few issues in the team which are developing, shall we say.
The one area you didn't mention there, Nick, was goalkeeper. And obviously it's been quite an eye-catching loan move in with Keylor Navas. Will he be playing and how's he doing?
He will be playing. He's been pretty good. He's only played two games. He was really good. 1-0 win against Leeds. Let in two against Fulham, but don't think either of them are really his fault. He's incredibly reassuring. And I'm kind of talking about him in a way that sort of seems to suggest it's a normal thing that Keylor Navas is in goal for Nottingham Forest.
I'm just thinking, though, from what everything you've said so far, he's due an injury in the next kind of few hours. <don't you? laughs>
That was mean, David. That was mean.
Come on, mate. It'd be Wayne Hennessy in goal if he's not. And don't sort of frighten me like that. It's completely absurd that he's there. And it's the weirdest thing is that we needed... Dean Henderson is on loan for Manchester United and he's injured at the moment. He's been really good, although you do have to sort of say a few Hail Marys when he's got the ball at his feet. And Keylor Navas is not like that. And it is in the two games so far anyway, it's been incredibly sort of reassuring when he's been there. If you can get past the weirdness of it being Keylor Navas in goal for Forest, particularly during the Leeds game when the commentator was making reference to Keylor Navas playing in the game, it did take a few seconds for me to remember that he was playing for Forest. I'm aware that this all does sound a little bit small time, but it is after the kind of 23 years of broadly terrible drudgery that Forest suffered in the second and third tiers. It is pretty odd to have four Brazilians and like four, I think they're all internationals. They've certainly all been called up for the Brazil team if they haven't actually played games. Yeah, to have four Brazilian internationals and Keylor Navas in the team, it takes a bit of getting used to. It's a little bit kind of, it feels a little bit like, oh, we're just impressed with the famous people. But, you know, when you're used to having, you know, that's... Tony Vaughan, there you go. There's a
common link, yeah.
There's a mutual Forest City link. When you used to having players of the sort of Tony Vaughan oeuvre in your team, then it is, you know, it's quite nice. It's quite nice.
Yeah. Well, Nick, we got the charity bet shortly, so let's get a score prediction from you for that for this game.
Yeah, I think I'd love to be more optimistic, but I think it'd be relatively straightforward. Win for City 3-1, I think.
Good. Well, we'll put that on, Nick. Thank you very much for joining us on today's show. Nick Miller from The Athletic.
No problem. Thanks for inviting me.
Now, the Champions League returns for City on Wednesday, and it's a trip to RB Leipzig coming up. In a moment, we'll hear from the reporter with Sky Sports, Philipp Hintze. But first, I've been speaking to the former German footballer turned journalist Guido Schäfer to find out more about Wednesday's opponents.
Yes, I think it was very important that Marco Rose will come in September to RB Leipzig. he brought back the dynamic match, the intense in the game from the squad, and I think they are on the good journey. But in this moment, to be honest, they have many personal problems, and that would be a great problem in the games against Manchester City.
Yeah, what have those problems been at the moment? It's because it seems just looking from the outside, the results seem to have been pretty good up until they played Union Berlin. So what have the problems been?
Yeah, the big problem is called Christopher Nkungu. He's the man. He makes a difference. Huh? He's the best player in the Bundesliga, and I think you know that he will go to Chelsea, London. Yes, sadly for Manchester City. He's a brilliant and perfect guy. And yes, I said to you, he makes a difference. And without players which are able to make the difference, it's very very. Difficult to play against teams like Union Berlin. They have a good defense, and then you need players like Nkungu. He makes new situations, he creates new situations in the match and open new horizons. And okay, he's not in the squad, and also Dani Olmo, another player who's able to make the difference. And without Nkungu and without Olmo, I think the big favorite is Manchester City.
Yeah, just looking again at Leipzig's position in the table, it doesn't really. I expected them to be higher up based on the results that I'd seen recently. Well, how have they been doing this season, especially since the World Cup?
They will start with Domenico Tedesco, yes, and they in the last season they won the cup, the German Cup, and it was first and great victory for this club. But in the former times with Domenico Tedesco, it wasn't so intense, the match, and he plays very slow and without speed and without power. And but when they won the title, it wouldn't be able to send him away to get rid of him. And then after five or six matches in the Bundesliga, they had only 5 points. And then the great boss reacted, and Oliver Minzoff said, "Okay, it's no way with Domenico Tedesco. The way is on the end." And now Marco Rose, he's born in Leipzig. He was a professional player in Leipzig, also in Mainz, and he was the coach from Borussia Dortmund. And Dortmund said to Marco Rose, "Oh, you are not good enough. You get no second season in our legendary club." And then it was the choice or the opportunity for Leipzig and for Marco Rose to work together. And since this time, it's brilliant, yes. But the results are okay. The way they play football is also okay. But I told you, you have no Nkungu, you have no Olmo, and also you have Timo Werner. He's not in a good shape. He came out of a big injury. And without these three players, this is not so easy to compare.
Yeah, they just looking ahead to the game with City. They obviously have Wolfsburg on Saturday in the beforehand. What are you expecting from Leipzig to play against City? We've seen a few different styles from Leipzig as you say recently. What do you expect they'll do to try and play against City?
I think Rose will win every match. He played against Real Madrid and in Madrid, also at home, very good and intense matches. And he's a man you want to play a courage team and a team with power. And I'm sure, and also self-confidence, I'm sure he will win both matches against Manchester, yes, and he won't go through the next stage in the Champions League. But he knows exactly what is possible against Manchester City. Where's he pressing? Pressing line. I think he wouldn't press on the in the deep in the half from Manchester City. But he will say to his man, his team, "We want to celebrate a big party. And we are proud to be part of the party with Manchester City. And let's have fun. Show our fans
we are able to create a very nice match, and we are able perhaps to beat them. And I think this is the most important impact which Rose gives his teams. He's like, man, it's football. We love this sport. We earn a lot of money. Okay, let's do it. Go and play football. When City is on stage, when City is in the top performance, when they 100% fit, then it's very, very, very difficult to stop them. It's, perhaps they are unstoppable on some days. But I think there is a little chance for Leipzig. Also because Man City isn't so brilliant in the last few matches, and they have their own problems. Also, the speeches about the financial things, and there are many rumors. And I think, okay, RB need two legendary days, and perhaps Man City team that is not in its best shape. And then, yes, for me, it's nearly sure we go through against Man City.
Yeah. So, looking at the squad, you've mentioned a couple of players who may not play. Who are the players that are dangerous for Leipzig at the moment? Who are the players if Leipzig are going to get a result across these two legs? Who will do it?
I think the most dangerous player for Man City is Willy Orban. He's the for me is a legendary player. He had no big skills, but he's a big man. He has a great power, a good mentality. He's the chief of the defense, and also in the offense, standards and corners. And he's a very good man and a very good header. And I think this is a dangerous man for Manchester City. But Timo Werner now is not in form. He's as He made the wrong decisions in three from four situations, and he's not as fast as he was before he had his injury. And also André Silva, Portuguese forward, he's a good player, a good technique, but I think I'm faster than him, and I'm 58.
So just to finish then, Guido, let's have a score prediction for the first leg of the game. What do you think it'll be?
Pardon me?
What would your score prediction be for the first leg of the game?
In Germany, we called it wie tippst du, a tip?
Oh, a tip, yes.
Yes, a tip. Oh, a tip, yes. A draw, a 2-2.
2-2.
2-2. And we are very proud, my friend, that this great match would start in Leipzig, and with Pep Guardiola, Erling Haaland. It's a dream comes true for whole Leipzig that we are able to play against such teams. And we're looking forward. And the fans are very, very lovely. They love football, and they are not so aggressive. No, they are lovely. And they will invite the Manchester City fans for a beer, and it would be a very, very nice atmosphere.
So we can now bring in Philipp Hintze, who is a TV reporter for Sky Sports in Germany. Philipp, the last time City played Leipzig in Germany, Leipzig won. It was the final game of the group in December 2010, and Leipzig had no manager. We've just heard how Domenico Tedesco came in after that game, changed the style a bit. How have things been since they appointed Marco Rose earlier this season?
Yeah, it was a different situation. So Rose took over for Tedesco, and the football is very different. So it's not the defensive style or the counter-attack style. It's a mix out of possession football, very straight possession, and of course the high press from the RB Salzburg school for past the years. So it's a very, very attractive football, possession, pressing, counter-attacks. It's a mix, it's not just one, so they are very, very successful with it.
Yeah, it sounds the sort of thing that City might struggle with, if I'm being honest. How do you think Marco Rosa will set up against City?
Yeah, it's a very difficult game, I think. So City are the favourites, of course, along with the players with Haaland, De Bruyne, and Guardiola as the manager. So I think it will be. So they've won the game in the group stage against Real Madrid because they played very, very courageous. So they press high, a lot of energy, very intense game from Leipzig. So that could be the key. So don't be shy. Don't have fear against City. So you have two legs of courts. Of course, you are the underdog, but maybe a courageous style of football could be the key.
Yeah, are they the sort of team that likes to get it down and pass through the lines sort of thing as well?
Yeah, maybe so. And Christian Kunku, the main striker, the key player is finally back out of Leipzig side. So he was injured with his knee, so 84 days without team training. And last week he began with team training, and this week against Wolfsburg on Saturday he could be, or he will be, in the squad of course, and maybe get some minutes, and then maybe next week against City, so he could be a starter, but definitely will be in the squad on the bench. So this is the X factor for Leipzig. Olmo is injured, so they need Nkunku, of course. But in summer, he will join Chelsea. But he's one of the best players in the Bundesliga.
Yeah, this just looking at the other players in the squad, who are the players that, if Leipzig are to get a result against City here, who are the players that will do it?
Yeah, so there's Dominik Szoboszlai in the center. So maybe on the 6, on the 8, or on the 10, he's very flexible. He's a very good player. He's fast, good ability to decide games. So he's very, very talented. Could be an X factor as well. And the defensive center within Schlager, Xaver Schlager and Konrad Leimer, very aggressive. Very intense. So it's an Austrian duo. They know each other for a long time. So this is very, very good. But Leimer is a little bit, injured, but not as hard as he could fail the game against City. But I think Schlager, Szoboszlai, Leimer, and Kunku, of course, maybe the center backs with Orban, Guardiol, a lot of quality. And for example, Joshua Guardiol, one of the best center backs in the world in the next year. So he will be very, very expensive if you want to get him. So the hope from RB Leipzig on these players, of course.
Yeah, just looking at the Bundesliga table as well, Bayern Munich aside, Leipzig are the joint top scorers along with Dortmund. How are they going forward? How do they like to attack?
Yeah, they were 18 games unbeaten till the last weekend. Union Berlin, the second in German division, won the game in Leipzig with 2-1. So the 18 game streak was incredible. Very, very successful with a defensive stability. So this was very good, but also offensive. They create a lot. They were very, very dangerous with crosses or with passes in the center. The pass accuracy is very, very high. So 18 games unbeaten was a great streak. But I think the defeat against Union, maybe a little decider in the title race. Yeah, that was a deep punch in the face of Leipzig. So at first, well, before the City game is Wolfsburg. If you lose or if you don't win this game, you can say goodbye to the title race. So it's also important to get this one. But of course, the minds are at the Champions League, I think. So it's a big game for Leipzig.
Yeah. Where do you think City could attack Leipzig? What weaknesses do they have in the squad? What will Guardiola be looking at and going, that's where we can cause some damage?
I think every position by three players are individually better than Leipzig. So the quality is, of course, very high and higher than the Leipzig team. So if you can find Erling Haaland with a classic De Bruyne cross, it's dangerous for every team. But I think oppressive possession. If I could say this, oppressive possession from City could be the game changer. So Leipzig don't know this style of play against them in the Bundesliga. So this could be the key. So City's possession and possession left, right, front, back, left, right. This could be very tired for the minds of Leipzig. So I think this in combination with the individual style of play with Haaland, De Bruyne and co.
Yeah. How are you expecting this game to go? What sort of patterns of play are you expecting? Because, you know, in most of these games, City tend to have a lot of the ball. What are Leipzig like out of possession, for instance?
Yeah, I think it will be a tight game in the first leg with some pressing moments by Leipzig because the possession is high. You said it. There will be pressing moments and maybe counterattacks. So this can be the game plan, but be courageous, be straight, maybe not a defensive pressing, maybe a mix out of midfield and attacking pressing with good moments and counterattacks. This could be the Leipzig style, but of course, City's qualities are unbelievable high, one of the best teams in the world with a great manager. So I think a tight game in the first leg, but of course, City will do it in both legs, so Maybe a tight game and then a clear game at the end.
This is the Blue Moon Podcast. Follow us on Twitter at Blue Moon Podcast.
That was a look at RB Leipzig for this coming week. Now it's charity bet time. The total on the charity bet is now £645 for the season so far. That's thanks to Frankie Maguire from All Villa No Filler, who correctly predicted City's 3-1 win over Villa last week. I actually had 3-1 to Arsenal in the game on Wednesday, so everyone that was tweeting us saying, well done, Mooney. Yeah, not well done at all. It's all going towards the Man City Fans Food Bank support group. They're collecting for Manchester Central Food Bank. William Hill is giving each of us a £10 correct score single. We heard from Nick that he thinks the Forest game is going to be 3-1 to City. That is 11-1 and £110 if he's right. Jack, what are you having?
3-0 City.
3-0 City is 15-2 and £75 if you're right. Ali?
Feeling bullish, I'll go with 4-0.
4-0 City, 12-1 and £120 if you're right. Ali, we'll stick with you for the Leipzig game. Where are you going with that one?
I think it's going to be tight and I think it'll be 1-2. We'll win 2-1.
2-1 City win is 15-2 and £75 if you're right. We heard from Guido earlier on, 2-2 he's gone for, which is 12-1 and £120. And Jack, that leaves us with you. What are you going for Leipzig?
I'm going for 3-1 Leipzig, but I do want to place on record that both of my score predictions that I wanted to give, Ali had already given them both.
That is true. And
great minds.
Much better to spread the bets, in my opinion, than bank on one. But 3-1 is 12-1 and £120 if you are right. Remember, you've got to be 18 or over to gamble. Prices can change. And for more on gambling responsibly, take a look at begambleaware.org. And that's the end of this week's Blue Moon Podcast. Thank you very much for listening. And thanks to my guests, Jack Gorn.
Thank you, mate. Cheers.
And to Ali Fogg.
Absolute pleasure.
Stay tuned for a clip of this week's Patreon show. It's an hour-long flashback to the 99-2000 promotion season. I'll be back next week to review the games against Forest and Leipzig, so I'll see you then.
That was the Blue Moon Podcast. Please give the show a rating and a review where you can. And don't forget, you can listen without the ads by signing up to our Patreon. You'll also get an extra episode each Monday. Here's a clip of this week's.
So the beautiful thing about the Kennedy goal is that was like, this is it, it's definitely done now. And I still, when I think of that goal, because you can be at games, but you watch the highlights so much, it's hard to think of like where you were in the ground, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
But I still think of that Kennedy goal of like sitting right behind it at the other end of the ground and seeing the ball coming over and just knowing he's going to score it and we're going up. And I don't know the right way to describe this, but that sort of, that goal going in the ground then, I'd say I was 13, nearly 14 at the time. And it felt, made my eyes sort of tingle a bit, which I think would be the first time I ever did grown up crying.
Yeah.
Rather, you know, because you're a kid, you cry all the time when you're having a tantrum. Something I'm very well versed in now. With but yeah, and adults get sort of like misty-eyed at things. That was the first time in my life I got misty-eyed about anything, because why do you get Misty Art when you're 13? You do it because of Manchester City, because they're ridiculous. I love that Kennedy goal. What an afternoon. It was amazing.
You can listen to more of that at patreon.com/Blue Moon Podcast and join us again next time for another episode.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Time is precious, and so are our pets. So time with our pets is extra precious. That's why we started Dutch. Dutch provides 24/7 access to licensed vets with unlimited virtual visits and follow-ups for up to 5 pets. You can message a vet at any time and schedule a video visit the same day. Our vets can even prescribe medication for many ailments, and shipping is always free. With Dutch, you'll get more time with your pets and year-round peace of mind when it comes to their vet care.